Coming up on Traveling with a Mouse, we're going to go into part two of Adam's trip that he took just not too long ago. That's coming up on Traveling with a Mouse. Welcome, everyone, to Traveling with a Mouse. I am your host for this episode, John Martin. And however, being the host, I'm going to be probably more like moderator because Adam's going to do most of the talking today because he's talking about his trip that he just most recently went on. And for those of you that recall, the first part was pretty much focused solely on the after-hours event, the Disney after-hours event that he went to.
Mm-hmm.
And if you haven't checked that episode out, go back and check it out. It would have been episode, what, 70?
Yeah, it was last Monday's episode.
Last Monday's episode, yes.
Yeah.
So if you haven't listened to that one yet, go back and check it out. And so, Adam, why don't you take it away and get us into part two?
Part two. This was my first time staying at the main tower of the Contemporary. I've done the Bay Lake Tower before. I enjoyed it quite a bit. I did the online check-in. This was kind of, I think this is at least the third time I've done online check-in. And I've had a different experience every time. So the time with the Polynesian, I think I've mentioned before, they kind of messed up my room completely. And the room wasn't ready for several hours after I arrived. The room that they did give me wasn't the correct room, but so that happened. And then the Grand Floridian, actually, the room was ready like an hour before I got there on a very busy day. So hats off to Grand Floridian for being more than on top of it. And here, the room was, there was a room ready, but I had made a room request for a higher floor. And so they were trying to honor that request. So they asked, I got a text around the time that I said I was going to arrive saying that the room was not ready yet. And then by the time I got there, I had gotten another text saying to come to the front desk to work out what room I was going to get. That when I got to the front desk, that's what they had told me was because I had requested a higher floor. They didn't have a high floor available, but they had one on the sixth floor. So I was perfectly fine with that because I didn't want to wait any longer for any room. So my
sixth floor is pretty up there, though, isn't it? I mean,
yeah, my concern was being too close to like Chef Mickey's or something and maybe a lot of noise or something like that. That's kind of why I requested a higher floor, just for that reason. But it wasn't bad. I mean, we were literally directly over, like, the sign for Chef Mickey's. So we were kind of on that side.
That's one floor above where the monorail comes in, right? Doesn't it come in on the fifth floor?
Fourth, yeah. Well, yeah, fourth. I mean, technically the monorail is on the fifth, but you get to it from the fourth.
Oh, okay.
Sort of. I mean, if that makes sense.
I was trying to think it was fifth. I couldn't remember if it was fourth or fifth floor that they always used to say on the announcement.
Yeah, the concourse is the fourth floor, but the monorail is kind of like the four and a half floor. I don't know. It's kind of, you have to go up to get to it. So,
gotcha.
Anyway, in our room, if you were close to the door, you could hear a lot of noise outside. But once you were kind of in the room where like the beds and everything were, you couldn't really hear anything. So it was fine. I just thought maybe higher would be less noise, but it ended up holding us up a little bit as far as the room being ready. So, but out of the three experiences I've had with online check-in, one time the room was ready before I got there, one time the room was ready when I got there, and then one time they completely screwed it up. So not bad overall, I guess.
I've actually done it several times, online check-in, and I've had good experiences with all of them. The only one that I think I mentioned it to you, or I mentioned it when I talked about the, ironically enough, and you had said something about it too, was the Poly.
Yeah.
Really. I had a problem with it, and so did you. So
interesting.
Interesting that we just both had the same issue.
Yeah.
Well, not the same issue, but we both had an issue with it.
Yeah.
I didn't get the room I requested, but then again, that was okay. I didn't expect to. There's only like, what, like a 70-something maybe 80%,
yeah,
the chance or whatever. And but my deal was I never got a text saying that the room was ready, even though it was already ready with the information, which I got all the other previous times I did online check-in on any hotel. They sent me a message saying that it was ready, but I never got one, so I had to go to the front desk and check in that way.
I do love bypassing the front desk if you have that option. I think that's fantastic, not having to wait around. You can just go straight to your room and open the door. You don't have to get a key because your key is your magic band. So I love that idea. So
yeah, I've also, before I mentioned Yacht Club, I don't think I have yet to visit the front desk at all.
Yeah, with the Grand Floridian, I didn't have to either. You can tell which deluxe resorts have the best staff, I guess, overall.
They really pay attention, I guess, to
at
it.
At least two of the best by far. So that's the Contemporary. I enjoyed it quite a bit. We ate at the Contempo Cafe when we got there, and they gave me a giant cupcake free because it was my birthday. So that was really nice, and that leads me to talking a little bit about some of the birthday perks I got. I felt like this year, like, I've gone and celebrated my birthday before, but not like actually on my birthday. So this time there was a lot more like birthday freebies that I got. You know, I don't remember getting any freebies for, like, you know, going on an anniversary or stuff. Like, I've gone on anniversaries and stuff, but for my birthday I got some small dessert pretty much everywhere we went. Be Our Guest gave us the gray stuff. This was the best dessert I got for free at the Contempo Cafe. It was a really large cupcake. The Mickey ears were Oreos. It was like a cookies and cream cupcake. It was really nice. Cool. And when I was at Epcot, everyone kept telling me to go to Club Cool because you can get a free slushie if you have a birthday pin, or if you tell them it's your birthday. I assume you have to have a pin. Every time I walked in there for the trip, I would just get a slushie because I'm like, hey, it's my birthday, can I get a slushie? So they would give me a free slushie. Not like amazing, but hey, that's pretty cool. And I got birthday cards they gave me one at Chef Mickey's, and they gave me one at Be Our Guest. I wasn't expecting much of anything, but those are some birthday freebies that I got as, I guess, keepsakes and free dessert, or free treat. So that was cool.
Yeah, it's been several years now that I went during my actual birthday too, and I'm trying to think. I don't remember having that much. I mean, they would do things like a free dessert sometimes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I don't remember specifically the kind or the type or anything.
Yeah.
I know when we were on our honeymoon, they did a lot of good stuff for us, little neat things here and there.
So the first thing after we ate, which actually Contempo Cafe, I really enjoyed. We just got, you know, sandwiches and stuff, but it was good. They had good food there. I was very happy with that. I would go back there and eat anytime. So we arrived around 11:30-ish, got in our room, got our luggage in there, and then went down and had lunch. I mean, that's the most convenient thing about Contemporary is I'm kind of hungry. Go down two floors, literally walk 10 feet from the elevator, and there you are eating at the Contempo Cafe. So, super convenient. After that, we decided, let's hop on the monorail and go to Epcot, since it's one stop away and change trains. That's pretty simple. But as soon as we arrived at the ticket center, the driver of the monorail came over and said, hey, if you're going to Epcot, by the way, you'll have to take a bus because the monorail is currently not operational, the Epcot line. We decided to just do it anyway, so we walked over and got right on a bus, but, you know, I had to stand anyway. So, just saying that the monorails, we had some issues with the monorails again. So this is kind of an ongoing theme of the last several years, really the last 3 or 4 years. There have been numerous issues with the monorail every time I've been there. And that was one of them. The Epcot line was down for a few hours that day. We were able to ride it back, thankfully. We only stayed for 3 or 4 hours, and then we came back, because that was the night of the after-hours event. So, we did that, but let's see, what else happened to the monorail that while we were there? I was going to mention the resort line was down the morning we were going to go to Magic Kingdom, but luckily we could walk there, so that's what we were going to do anyway. But the resort monorail was not operational the morning we went to Magic Kingdom for at least the first couple hours, and then it was operational later in the day. The door opening situation. So this happened probably, I think it was the next day we were going to Epcot. We were on the Epcot train at the station ticket center, the transportation ticket center, and the monorail doors closed, and then about 5 seconds later, one of the doors popped back open, and I was sitting there like almost like surprised and happy at the same time, because I'm like, I'm going to get to record this. But then after, before I could get my phone out and turned on, like the camera, they reshut the doors again, or like the little ding-dong thing happened and the door shut again. So obviously they're paying close attention to this. So, but the fact that it happened is a little bit kind of unnerving. Obviously, they're watching it, though, but it still happened. But, like, 5 seconds later, they reshut the door before we departed. So, that's interesting to me that I experienced that.
See, what really happened there was they saw you reach for your pocket to pull out your phone, and they were like, oh, we can't be having that.
Yes, no more social media issues.
They got them on it real fast.
Yes. So, of course, the warning signs, I put this out on Twitter, on our Twitter feed, TWTM Podcast, Twitter handle.
Right.
Put a picture of the sign that is up on every door now. There's four signs in every cabin above both doors, not to lean on it. Another thing that happened that I found was interesting, especially, I noticed this mostly on the resort monorail, ironically, not the Epcot monorail. But after each stop, as soon as we would, right as we were about to depart, the monorail operator would come on the sound system or the intercom, whatever you want to call it, and he would say, you know, next stop is Polynesian. Just make sure you stay clear of the doors, hold the handrails, that kind of thing. And they would do this for every stop before the monorail started moving, which I'm guessing the spiel, you know, it's sort of kicks in after you start moving. So the monorail operator would come on before that to mention that. So this must be like a quick thing till maybe they re-record something or maybe move some of the audio ahead of when the train starts. I don't know how those events are triggered, but it seemed like it was a temporary thing to kind of at least warn people before the train started moving to stay away from the doors. Rather than let the monorail spiel take over, which basically after we started moving, the monorail spiel kicked in and told you to do the same thing. You know, stay clear of the doors, hold on to the handrails.
Right.
So I recorded it. I may insert it here just to let you hear it. So I found that interesting. I don't know if this is a permanent thing that they're going to have to do now, or is this a temporary thing? I don't know, but I found that interesting. So that was the monorail. Let's move on to, at Epcot, we did the Festival of the Arts, which is the newest festival / reason to get more money out of people.
So like food and wine without calling it food and wine.
Yeah, basically. This is a little bit smaller scale than Flower and Garden and, of course, Food and Wine, which is the biggest of the festivals. But I really enjoyed it. They had some unique stuff to do. Some of the food was very unique, very artsy looking. A lot of the items were like, one of the most interesting booths was the deconstructed dish. I think we tried everything from that one. They had like a deconstructed Reuben, a deconstructed BLT. The dishes were very unique and artsy looking. And I noticed the prices are a little higher, it seemed, for these. Probably because they took a little more time to put together and maybe they just looked more fancy than normal. Some of the unique ones that kids were like the artist palette, or it was a giant cookie with frosting, and they gave you a little brush so that you could color the cookie with the frosting. So they dabbed like the different colored frosting on there so it looked like an artist's palette, and they could mix and match the frosting. However, I will say the frosting hardened pretty quickly, so you weren't really able to do much painting with it. But anyway, there's just some unique food items I thought were really cool. Some cool desserts and stuff like that. Another fun festival, I really liked it. The most unique stuff, though, were like they had a mural on the wall. I think they pretty much redid this every day or did a different one, a few different ones, where I think it was sponsored by Glidden, the paint company, where they gave you a small brush and a sample of different color paint, and they told you, you know, it was all color coordinated and numbered, so they would give you a little cup of paint and say, go paint 4 squares of the number 10 or something. And it was, you would go and paint this giant wall, these little squares, and at the end of the day, it would be like this actual painting of something. So you would help paint this giant painting. It was cool. And at the end of the line, when you were done, they would hand you this postcard of what it would look like once it's done, if you weren't able to come back and see it when it was finished. But it seemed like they did that every day, because enough people were coming and doing that to where every day it would be a finished piece. So that was cool. And then they had a lot of these photo opportunities where, like at the American Adventure, they had the photo where you could go into a piece of art like the Washington crossing the Delaware, and you could be a part of that. And so they had several of those out where you could be in a painting, so to speak. We didn't really do any of those except for the main one out front, which was just the Festival of the Arts picture. But another cool thing was at the Odyssey, they had drawing classes, I guess. It was free. Different times during the day where you would draw a different Disney character. So we did one where we were drawing Minnie Mouse, and so my son and I did it.
I'm going to say this is also where you ran into a YouTube celebrity.
Yes, I was going to mention that, yes. Justin Scard, if anyone doesn't know who that is. He's a travel vlogger, but mostly Disney. He does a lot of Disneyland. That's where he lives in California. He does a lot of Disneyland. But lately he comes to Disney World quite a bit. And he also does Disneyland Paris on occasion. And then, you know, other sites and things across the country, but mostly Disney. So
you know, when you told me you thought you were going to be on the show and that Aiden was on the show,
mm-hmm.
I happened to see the clip, and there's a point where you like turn around, and I guarantee you that was the moment that you like recognized that it was.
Well, we were just doing the class, and my wife was standing back with our youngest son. She was eating and drinking something from the Odyssey that was part of the festival. And we were doing the art class. And I just heard her whispering to me, like, kind of like trying to get my attention. And because she noticed him first, because he just sort of showed up and was filming. His fiance actually is in a lot of the videos. And my son likes her because it reminds him of his babysitter. Like, he has a babysitter that looks very similar to his fiance, so he likes her a lot, and she was noticing that Aiden was waving at her and stuff, so she noticed us before he did, and then he went off and filmed some other things in the room, in the, like, some art pieces, and then came back and noticed that we were kind of waiting for him, We didn't want to interrupt him, but then, you know, he came over and talked to us for a few minutes. He was very nice. Very nice. A lot taller than I thought he would be in person, actually. But anyway, overall, Festival of the Arts, a lot of fun. I would go back and do it again. I think this is going to be around for a while. So, it's a good festival.
Yeah.
So, that night, we got back. This was the second day. We got back. We went to California Grill for dinner. That was kind of my birthday dinner. That's what I wanted to do. We mostly ate sushi and then got some of their flatbreads. The sushi was probably the best sushi I've ever eaten. It was so good. And the flatbread was just as good. It was delicious. Or the pizza. They may call it pizza there, but it was delicious. So, two thumbs up for California Grill. Absolutely loved it. They were incredibly accommodating because a lot of times, you know, you see that you have to kind of park the stroller down on the level where you check in before you go all the way up to the 15th floor. But our son, you know, our youngest son is only 5 months old. He was sleeping, so they were very gracious enough to let us keep him in the stroller, take the stroller into the restaurant, and just sort of let him sleep so that we could actually eat and not have to hold him or pass him around, that kind of thing. So, incredibly nice, very accommodating. Can't say enough about how great the experience was. They were fantastic. So, the other thing that I wasn't fully aware of at the time was my wife ordered the celebration cake, which is something new, apparently. I knew you could order, like, certain things, but she ordered a celebration cake, which is new. It's basically a Mickey Mouse shaped cake. You can get it in white chocolate or dark chocolate, regular chocolate, whatever. And that's the one that she got for me, and it was delicious. It's very chocolatey, so you have to really like chocolate. But it's a Mickey Mouse shaped chocolate cake, and of course they lit the candle and everything, and the server actually went and cut it for us and served it to us like it was a dessert. So, but you can have it sent to most sit-down restaurants, like most table service restaurants will accommodate that, where you can order it way ahead of time and they'll have it for you there when you arrive at your reservation. So it was cool. That was a neat little thing that I didn't know about until not long before we got there, so that was nice of her to do.
Aww.
Yes, that was sweet. So let's go to my Magic Kingdom day. This was interesting because it was Saturday on a holiday, and you were looking up the crowd calendar beforehand. I believe it was a 10, or it might have been, it was a 9 or a 10 on Touring Plan's crowd calendar that day.
I remember now, yeah.
It was one of the two. It was basically an incredibly crowded day. But we kind of, so we met our friends there, my friend Jason, his wife Cindy, and their son, and his wife's mother also was with them. So we had a big group, basically, at that point. We met them there that morning and spent the whole day at Magic Kingdom. So we got there around rope drop. It was a little bit after rope drop. And I had, you know, just watched this video, and I may link to it as well, because it was exactly our experience. And it was a video from Touring Plans on YouTube. I had watched it maybe the week before we went. They were testing the rope drop to do Seven Dwarfs Mine Train. Can you do a rope drop and not wait too terribly long to get on Mine Train? And so they had about five of the people from Touring Plans stagger their entrance. So they had one person that was on the first train on Mine Train. He was like at the front of the line when the rope dropped. And then there was a few that sort of hung back every few minutes, 5 or 10 minutes back from that, from each other. And all of them were able to ride Mine Train within 30 minutes of getting there. And that was kind of our experience. I knew that the line would be out, you know, outside close to, you know, heading towards teacups, you know, on the side. That's kind of where the line gets to first thing in the morning. because pretty much everybody goes straight for Mine Train. And when I saw that, you know, I knew at that point in the video, they were saying it was about 30 minutes from that point, or 35 minutes. And I looked at the Touring Plans app, and that's what it said. It was about 33 minutes is what it said, expected wait. But the posted time was at that point over, it was about 60 minutes, I think, was what the posted time was. And the cast member was telling people that it was about an hour to an hour and a half from that point, which I knew was not true because I saw the video from the week before, and I knew right. It was going to be a little less. So it turned out to be exactly right. Touring Plans was pretty much dead on with their time. It was about 30 to 35 minutes at that point. And we probably didn't get there till closer to 8:30. It was like 8:20 to 8:30 when they got in line. So, and it was before 9 when they got out. So it was pretty good. Pretty good wait. It turned out to be pretty good strategy. So if you want to do Mine Train, you don't have a fast pass, you can do Rope Drop, and you can get in pretty well. If you just go with the flow, get in line, it won't be too bad. So
yeah, I kind of figure that with most of the popular attractions, most of the time anyway.
Yeah. I mean, your experience with Flight of Passage was, I mean, because it's the most popular attraction in Walt Disney World right now, it's got to be, you know, you waited less than an hour. So,
right.
And you were not quite Rope Drop, right? Because the bus driver tried to take you to Magic Kingdom.
Yeah. Well, this was also a
early magic, right?
Early magic hour. Okay. Morning. Yeah.
That's right.
And, you know, they didn't open it until almost time for regular hours, pretty much, for Flights of Passage. So, I mean, you can do, if you want to use that extra magic hour to get in line, basically, you could.
Yeah. So I'll give a lot of credit to my friend Jason for his fast pass strategy, which is basically persistence pays off. I think I'll label it that way. Because we had a larger group, it was a lot easier to basically have someone be our fast pass monitor to continually check the app. This strategy really worked for us. Like, we were able to get a lot of fast passes that day. So of course we had planned ahead and gotten all morning fast passes. So I know we had fast pass for Buzz, for Winnie the Pooh, and I think it was either Barnstormer or Dumbo. I think it was Barnstormer maybe. Early morning, you know, fairly within the first couple hours of us being there. And Winnie the Pooh was our first fast pass, but the ride was actually down. And so we got a floating fast pass given to us on the app after that for everything but Mine Train, I believe.
Of course.
Right. So, of course, it may have excluded Peter Pan, too. But we got everything but, I can't remember now, but it was a floating one where we could use it any time. The cool thing about that is once we used the other two, we still had that one, but we were actually able to continue booking fast passes. So we didn't have to use that one before we could book other ones. So that was a huge help because we had those we could save for later, essentially, and ride whatever we wanted. So that was a huge help. But what we did after, while they were doing Mine Train, we did the Little Mermaid Under the Sea one, and then he did Teacups with the Kids while I got coffee and something from the Cheshire Cafe. I got a Cheshire Cattail, which was very good, by the way. And then after that, I believe we did Buzz Lightyear, because we had a fast pass for the Buzz, so we did Buzz. Then I believe we did People Mover. Then after People Mover, the ladies went and did Space Mountain with their floating fast passes. And while they were doing Space Mountain, we did Carousel of Progress, which I sort of drugged my friend on, because I love Carousel of Progress. And I hadn't done it in a while, so it was time for me to do it again. So still needs updating, but it's still a good show. After that, we met back up and we walked over I think we did Barnstormer. I think that was our other fast pass. And then after that, I believe we actually walked over and did look back to the hub and did the move it, shake it, dance it, play it street party for a few minutes, and then watched some of the Mickey's Friendship Fair stage show, which was a little boring, to be honest. So this is where that strategy started kicking in, where we had one person, he was really the fast pass watcher. So he was constantly checking the app, looking for something, because this was a very busy day and not much was available, but he would keep checking and keep checking and keep checking, and then something would show up and he's like, oh, well, we got Dumbo in like 20 minutes. So we booked Dumbo. And so we walked over there and we did Dumbo. And then after that, it was getting close to our lunchtime, and I know we went ahead and did the Meet Donald and Goofy, because that was a fairly short wait. I think it was 20 minutes that we did that. And then after that, I believe it was time for lunch. So as we were doing this, you know, he was just keep checking the app and found, I think it was Haunted Mansion maybe right after lunch. And so that was our next one. We went to be our guest. I was able to use touring plans, which I don't think I mentioned before, but the touring plans reservation finder, and was able to get a be our guest lunch within a week. It may have even been within 2-3 days of, you know, when we got there. So it was probably 3-4 days before we got there. So the reservation finder is really helpful. It worked. It may not work every time at getting a hard to get reservation, but for this one, I was able to get be our guest within 2-3 days of going, and that was great. So, but we got in there and the restaurant broke down. We were 2-3 groups back from actually ordering our lunch. We were going to use the mobile order, but apparently with mobile order you can't pay separately. If you're in a big group, you have to pay with one person. So in order to pay separately, we just decided to go in, and of course that was our mistake. I mean, we didn't know the restaurant was going to break down, but anyway, the restaurant broke down for about 20 minutes. I think it must have been something with the ordering system or something. But after that, we had our lunch. It was good. It was fine. The restaurant was not as busy because it had broken down, so a lot of groups had already left. So that was nice. But again, be our guest. It's okay. Once you've done it a few times, it's kind of, you know, it's all right. It's not anything special, but it is fun to go with people who haven't been before. So that's always a good thing. That's going to be the reason I would go back again is maybe go if I'm going with someone who hasn't been before. So then after that, I know we did, I think it was Haunted Mansion after that. And then after that, we, you know, kept checking fast passes, and we were able to get Small World after that. And after that, we were able to get the Magic Carpets of Aladdin, and we did that. And then we were able to get Jungle Cruise, and we did that. And so every time, so another strategy he had too was, say, with Jungle Cruise, we wanted to do Jungle Cruise. So what he did was he found Jungle Cruise at like 7 p.m., and he would book it, and then he would refresh it and try and change the time and keep doing that. And then eventually another time would show up, and it was earlier and earlier, and he was able to get right around the time that we were in that area. So it just happened to work out, but I think this is a decent strategy if you have enough battery power. And if you don't, they have the fuel rod locations in the parks and on the resorts, so you can have an extra battery charger. But most people have those. If you don't, you should get one, because you'll need lots of cell phone battery. Because I think we went through both of our batteries at least once between the two of us, doing mobile ordering and doing the checking fast passes and stuff like that. Checking wait times and fast passes, that's all we did. But it worked. I mean,
sounds like a fun vacation.
That's true. But honestly, you know,
it made for a better one overall, right?
It did. I mean, because if you have a person that can wrangle the kids, and then you have someone who's free to check the app for fast passes and stuff. I mean, that's kind of how you have to do it. So that's going to be my strategy going forward when we have a group where it's not just me, my wife, and my kids. When you have more than two or three adults, that's when you can say, okay, I'm going to be the fast pass person. Everybody else, you know, handle the kids or whatever you got to do that. So if you can have those roles defined ahead of time and have somebody who enjoys doing that, like I do, I would love to be this person, but it worked. I mean, we were able to get fast passes for probably 8 or 10 attractions. And then I don't think we did a standby for anything, but maybe the character meet that we did at Pete's Silly Sideshow. Otherwise, I think we pretty much did fast pass lines because we were able to get them. But I think I counted all in all, we did 12 attractions during that very busy day. And I'm telling you, Small World was like a 40-minute wait that day. So, you know, we were able to get pretty much everything we wanted to do in. I think Peter Pan was probably the only one we didn't do that, you know, was a significant wait. So, that we would have done had we been able to. But that was pretty much it. The mobile ordering at Aloha Isle was not very ideal. It did not work out. Now, it was a busy day, of course. I think they still have some kinks to work out with some of these that they've added recently. But I ordered a Dole Whip. First of all, the app kept losing my... I don't want to say losing my reservation, but it would keep signing me out where I would have to sign back in. And it would say, oh, this is not available for mobile ordering. But then I would refresh or re-sign in and it would show up and I could make my order. So it was a little frustrating, but again, it was a busy day, so maybe that's the case, I don't know. But I was finally able to order a Dole Whip as we were sitting there in Small World, you know, how it always gets backed up at the end. So I was able to get my mobile order in while we were waiting to get off of Small World. The line, however, for mobile order pickup was probably a 10-minute line that we were standing in. It was all the way back behind the Tiki Room exit. So, you know, we had to, whenever the Tiki Room let out, there was like a flood of people trying to get past us. Then we were standing in the way because we were in line to get our mobile order. So, when I saw how long that line was, I went ahead and said, I'm here to pick up my order well before I was able to get to the front of that line, because I knew it would take forever for my order to be ready. So by the time I got to the front of the line, my order was actually ready. So that was an interesting experience, to say the least. It was not a very smooth process, and a lot of people were complaining about that. It wasn't a very good process, so I don't know what was going on. Maybe it was just that day, but yeah, mobile ordering at Aloha Isle was not very good. But I got my Dole Whip. I had two, actually. It still worked out. It was just a much longer wait than it should have been. That's about it. So I'll briefly mention the next day at Animal Kingdom. This was the last day. This was the day we left. We decided to try the premium parking. If you're like a day guest, you pay $45. And as an annual pass holder, or I believe, you know, if as a resort guest, you would pay $23, so you pay the difference between the normal parking and the premium. So $23 is what we ended up paying just to try it out. My wife wanted to try it. She liked it. I didn't think it was worth even $23, but what they do is they give you a special tag to hang from your rearview mirror. They tell you to turn your flashers on and stay in the center lane. This is at Animal Kingdom, so it could be different for other parks. But at Animal Kingdom, so we had to still kind of wait in a long line. But once we got to the actual parking lot, the cast members noticed we had our flashers on, that we had the thing in the mirror, and they diverted us off to the right to a different area of the parking lot, and we ended up parking kind of where like RVs and other shuttle buses drop people off. And there was a section designated for you know, it was coned out in a certain color cone that they were telling us to park in the green section because we had a green tag. And when we pull up to the area where you're supposed to park, they stop you, they'll give you a park map, and they'll give you bottles of water. So we were able to just say, hey, give us 4 bottles of water, and they gave us 4 bottles. And they were cold, which is nice. But for $23 or $45 if you're not staying on property, I don't think that's worth that. Because even though we were closer than most guests at that point parking, we were still, I would say, 500 yards from the entrance of the park, something like that. Maybe I'm overestimating that a little bit, but it was a good 5-minute walk to where the bus drop off is, maybe, something like that. So, I mean, it was definitely closer than the normal parking area, but because we were kind of on the side where the entrance is for Animal Kingdom. So we were closer, but I don't know. I just didn't feel like it was worth it. So,
well, Animal Kingdom, the parking there is not super close no matter what you do.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt.
Bus stop is.
Right, that's what I felt like. I didn't think
even,
it was worth it.
Even the handicap, which I've actually been in the handicap one before, mm-hmm. It's not super close. I mean, if you get there early enough, the handicap can be as close as you can get.
Right.
But, yeah, it's not, it's probably one of the furthest, not as far as, say, Magic Kingdom, obviously, is away from the actual
right.
park.
Right, right.
But it's probably the next worse, I guess is the best way I know to explain it.
That's
Animal Kingdom, the bus stop is actually the absolute best as far as where you get dropped off.
Yeah.
So than parking. I mean, whereas the studios, you can get just as close as the buses.
That's true, yeah. I bet.
The right strategy, I guess. Every they're early enough.
Yeah. I bet the parking for the premium parking there is pretty good, and I bet Epcot is pretty good too. But at Animal Kingdom, I didn't think it was worth it personally, but I was closer than if we had parked in the regular parking lot, we would have definitely had to take the, you know, the tram or the trolley all the way back to, we would have been way in the back of the parking lot by the time we arrived there, because we had done Chef Mickey's that morning. So we arrived about an hour or two after the park had opened. It was worth it, I guess, in that regard, because we were closer and it was the day we were leaving. So we drove from Animal Kingdom back home. So in that regard, it was worth it, I guess, because we were closer, we were easier to get out, and we didn't have to use the tram or anything. So it was helpful there.
I can see in the near future we're going to have to do an episode on transportation strategies.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, because there's all kinds of different things you can do. But let's see, quickly wrapping up here with Animal Kingdom, I did a mobile order of Setuli just to see if it was still as good as it was the first time I did it. And it was. It was way better than Aloha Isle. So I made the order as I was walking into... We were kind of walking from the Oasis into Discovery Island, and I made my order. I just ordered a grog thing because I know you talked about trying it, so I ordered the green grog, and so I just ordered it just to see how quickly it would be compared to Aloha Isle experience was. As I was walking into Pandora, I went ahead and said I'm here just to see what it would do, and then within, you know, like a minute or two, it popped up that it was ready. So I was like, wow, this is already better. So I walked into Setuli and walked straight up to the counter, just like I had the last time. My grog was sitting there waiting for me. So again, this is the restaurant that started the mobile ordering. So they are more than equipped for it. They're ready for it. This is the best experience I've had with mobile ordering, and it's continued to be. So I can't say enough about how convenient that was. 2 thumbs up. I love the food there too, so this is one I want to do every time. So after that, we decided to do Navi River Journey standby, just because we didn't really want to do anything else, and it was super busy, and we didn't want to try to do the fast pass thing because we were leaving right after lunch. So it was like, let's just do one thing and try it out. So this was the one thing where the Touring Plans app was a little bit off on the time. The posted wait was 90 minutes on the outside. And
I don't believe you.
Yeah. Well, so here's the thing though that happened. We were sitting at Setuli, and I was looking at it saying, it says 90, the wait time says 77 minutes actual wait time. We should probably do it now if we're going to do it. And then it went up to 80, and then went up to 82, and that's when we had gotten in line. And so I think probably it was going up faster than the app was saying. So anyway, by the time we got in line, it was looking like 80 was going to be the right number. But then I noticed, you know, once we got close to the front, that's when they waive so many fast pass, way more, like 10-to-1 ratio. And I noticed also there were some guests in wheelchairs or mobile carts that got in front in the fast pass line. So that probably added to the wait as well. It ended up being 89 minutes that we waited, because I set a timer, and we actually stepped on the ride at 89 minutes. It was a little off, but I think it was mainly because of, I mean, it's only a few minutes, so I don't think you can really say it's a huge difference when it's only 5 or 10 minutes off. So, but that was one instance where it was kind of off, but it was only a 10-minute difference, so can you really say that's a big deal? Not really. So the last thing we did was Tiffin's. We had a lunch at Tiffin's. This is one I've wanted to try for a while. Tiffin's was good. The food is very expensive here, and the portion sizes are really small. But the food is delicious, and our server was fantastic. What I ordered, two of us ordered the same thing, and what showed up on our plate made us think that they had thought we ordered one thing and had them split it, because literally half of our plate had like two sausages and two like meat steaks. I'm not sure what the like tiny steak pieces on them with. So it was literally half the plate had nothing on it. The other half of the plate had just a couple of things on it. I should have posted a picture of that, but we were laughing about that quite a bit because it was such a tiny portion of food, and I think it was like $36 for the item that we ordered. So
wow.
Yeah, it was tiny, and it was like, wow, this is, you're serving this as a complete meal, okay, as an entree. But it was delicious, but it was a little ridiculously priced, I think, for some of it. But again, the experience was good. We had a really good server. So that was it in a nutshell. That is that trip report over. That is what we did.
All right. And you've managed to wrap it up in just two episodes, which I was not capable of doing. All right. That's going to wrap up this episode of Traveling with a Mouse. As always, you can find us on social media, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at TWTM Podcast. You can also go to our Spreadshirt store and buy Traveling with a Mouse gear, whether it be your t-shirts, your coffee mugs. You can even get a dog bandana. I mean, you can pretty much buy anything Spreadshirt has to offer.
Pillowcases.
You can put Traveling with a Mouse on it. And where else can we be contacted?
On the World Wide Web, travelingwiththemouse.com. You can email us podcast@travelingwiththemouse.com. And we can also be reached on our Patreon. If you want to support the show and like it, you can become a Patreon, patreon.com/TWTM podcast.
So for John Martin and Adam Brown, this has been Traveling with a Mouse, and we hope you will join us on our next journey.